Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. And tonight we are talking four issues of Dr. Midnight Comics. We are talking Dr. Midnight's first appearance from 1941 in All-American Comics number 25. And we are talking his three-issue miniseries from 1999. The writing on the All-American number 25 is Charles Reisenstein, who also created and wrote Mr. Terrific stories. The art is by Stan Scheimer, who also helped create and did art for Johnny Thunder and the Thunderbolt series. And then on the Matt Wagner 1999 series, we've got the god himself, Matt Wagner, on writing. And we have John K. Snyder III on painting. Like I said, I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing okay, Bob. For those of you wondering who Dr. Midnight is, let me just read the little synopsis here. As dark as night itself is Dr. Midnight, the avenging figure of darkness who appears and strikes at evil with the speed of lightning and then retires into the night as quickly as he came. Who is he? What is he? This is the story of how he began. Dr. Midnight.
I've long wanted to do this because I have a strong nostalgia for the 1999 miniseries. I got it when we were in high school. Thought it was cool. Liked Matt Wagner stuff a lot back then. And then, sadly, Dr. Midnight hadn't really become much of a thing since then. He's mostly just been the go-to superhero surgeon as part of the JSA.
Mark my words, he's going to be the new Peacemaker.
Matt feels it. You feel it in your bones?
I'm calling it here, Bob. 2028, Dr. Midnight, every kid's got one.
Well, Matt, to start with the origin of Dr. Midnight in All-American Comics number 25, which I had never read, and listeners, I did read, I think, about six Golden Age Dr. Midnight stories, and this is the best one. They're not very good. They're not hidden gems that you miss, but I thought it might be interesting to start out with the Golden Age Dr. Midnight. Matt, did you have any broad or overall thoughts on Golden Age Dr. Midnight?
What I appreciate you doing, I appreciate you making me read this old school origin here because it helped me better understand the 1999 origin story, because a lot of it carries over, but of course in a more modern way. And since I didn't have any real context other than kind of what his costume looked like prior to reading this, that helped.
Yeah, and it is two different guys. Charles McNider is the Golden Age Midnight. And
correct.
Peter Cross is the modern. And then there was also Beth Chappell in the 80s, who I don't think ever had a solo series. I think she was just a supporting character in Infinity Inc., which I've never read. Always been mildly curious to read, but never ever read. But yeah, but that said, like Matt said, there's really broad similarities. And I knew that, you know, I knew enough about Dr. Midnight's deal when I read the Matt Wagner thing that I knew Wagner was modeling it pretty directly on the Golden Age Dr. Midnight. But yeah, I hadn't read the Golden Age Midnight stuff either until now. And reading it now, like you say, Matt, you can directly see how much he's directly drawing from this original comic in All-American 25.
So, Bob, going into it, though, Dr. Midnight's got a couple of, like, weapons he uses. He throws these bombs that cause everybody to see nothing, just everything blacks out. And he does some other things. He's got these special goggles, a live grenade that caused his blindness. But, I mean, other than that, like, what other special things does he have?
Well, in the Golden Age, maybe I'm wrong, but I think in the Golden Age, it's pretty much just the goggles, it's his owl, Hootie, and then it's the blackout bombs.
Oh, Hootie. I forgot to mention Hootie, my bad. Sorry. He does have a pet owl that he just hangs out on his shoulder.
I can't remember the specifics from the Modern Age already, but in the Modern Age, he has a lot more medical gimmicks, right? They exploit the fact that he's a doctor and he uses medicine to fight crime in a more creative way than I think he really does, at least in, there's a lot of Dr. Midnight series. I think there's 50 of them. I've just read five from the Golden Age, but my sense from the five I've read in the Golden Age is he doesn't use the medicine stuff that often. He's just basically another vigilante.
Which I can see through this, Bob, but maybe that's just because medicine improved since the first run. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, no. Like, so people are more attached to their gimmicks and their gadgets, I think, than they were in the 40s.
What kind of medicine would be thrown at him in the 40s? Is he like cocaine?
You can still inject him with tranquilizers and truth serums and what have you.
Oh, yeah.
That does set up my favorite panel from the first Dr. Midnight story, the All-American 25, which is the second page of that story. You see a gangster throwing a hand grenade, which is drawn by Stan Scheimer as a golden spear. And so he's throwing the golden spear hand grenade, which I thought was really funny. And that's the grenade, of course, that blinds Dr. McNider. And I thought there's an amusing parallel structure in the story, because on page 6 of the story, you see Dr. McNider testing his blackout bomb and throwing it. And both the blackout bomb and the grenade are very spherical, and you got the guys throwing it. So it's a fun parallel, I thought.
Yeah, it just hit me that the guy's name is McNider.
Oh, God, you're right. Oh, God, that is a terrible pun. I never processed that.
That's rough. Ugh, okay.
So, well, Matt, speaking of that, of a brighter note, so the antagonist here in this first comic is named Killer Maroney. Do you think this is Sal Maroney's granddad?
Of course he is, Bob. All those Maroneys run on the same tree. Do you know Bone M? He was in the 40s.
See, Matt, and you thought, you were like, why is Bob making me read this random Golden Age comic? And there's deep Batman ties.
Yes. Yeah.
Boney Maroney's grandfather in the Golden Age comic. We're going to have Batman villains in the 1999 comic. There's deep Batman ties.
Deep cuts here, Bob.
Another thing I wanted to note about the Golden Age story is that it's an interesting departure from the 1990 series that the 1990 series doesn't do. It's not a very long story. It's maybe 8 pages at most, probably. But in the middle, there's a long period of Dr. McNider not being a superhero, just being a blind guy who doesn't know he can see at night. He retires from medicine because, of course, they can't imagine a blind doctor, because 1940 stories are a little ableist. And instead, he takes up writing and he becomes a pulp writer. And I just thought that was really funny, that there's this meta quality to Dr. Midnight that he's also a pulp writer, which is sort of reflected in the 90s series with his sidekick chronicling his adventures. But even though the 90s miniseries is so much longer than this 8-page Golden Age story, it's interesting that the Golden Age story gives you more of a sense of McNider being on injury leave after he's blinded and getting this other job.
This author, Charles Reisenstein, he was really trying to make writing seem cool.
My favorite panel of the Golden Hand Grenade was on page 4. We have Dr. McNider finding Hootie and cradling Hootie while Hootie has a broken wing and his eyes closed, just kind of blissing out in Dr. McNider's arms. I thought that was very cute.
Okay, the one big difference between the artwork in the 1940s issue and the 99 is there's been an evolution in owl drawing. Because this dude only knew how to draw an owl one way. It's on every single page.
Man, we really advanced our owl draw.
I love it. No, because my favorite panel, Bob, is when the owl goes and strikes this guy's hand and his gun falls out. It's sort of into the book. And the owl is drawn the exact same way as it's drawn on all the other pages. What if a flat image of an owl just moved across the screen?
So let's move on to the 1999.
All right, Bob, 1999.
Written by Matt Wagner, one of my favorites. Have you read much Matt Wagner?
Yeah, he's known for Grendel, which I never really read any of, but Grendel was everywhere for a specific period of time, 94, 95, maybe. You would see Grendel posters all over comic book stores, and they were selling action figures at Walmart of Grendel, and I had no clue who he was. It was only for like a year or two, and then he disappeared. I didn't think much of him after that. He always, to me, fit in with, like, Spawn for some reason, but I don't even think they were related.
They weren't. And Grendel was more, I think he was at other companies, but he was mainly Dark Horse, whereas, yeah, Spawn was Image. Yeah. But, I mean, they were both urban vigilantes, but the tones were pretty different.
I have read some of the Sandman Mystery Theater. You had collected editions of those, I believe, or something.
I did.
And I read a couple of those. And then I did read Batman and the Mad Monk and Batman and the Munster Men. They were good, but they came out in a collection not too long ago, and I think I reread them, but there were some additional issues that were tacked onto it that I also read those as well.
Oh, cool. It might be worth going back to I think that both of those miniseries together, the Monster Men and the Mad Monk, are called Dark Moon Rising, and it's Wagner reimagining two of these iconic Golden Age Batman adventures with the Mad Monk and the Monster Men. That might be worth going back to for a podcast at some point. And then I love Sandman Mystery Theater, one of my favorite series. And you notice a theme here with Wagner, Golden Age revivals, right? Because Sandman Mystery Theater are modern adaptations of original Golden Age Sandman stories. And then he modernized these two Batman stories. He modernized the Dr. Midnight origin. Grendel, I don't think, has a Golden Age setting. I've only read a couple of trades of it. That would also be something I should catch up on. I've long meant to actually read Grendel. Really interesting writer. And then the artist, John Snyder, who I like a lot, but I know Matt is not a big fan of, also did a 1990 comics adaptation of a Joseph Conrad novel, Secret Agent. And I really dig that graphic novel. I sometimes teach it in my class.
Okay, so Bob, earlier in the podcast, you said that Snyder painted this. So this is a different style. Maybe that's my problem, is that I just don't like that look, that painted look in comics.
It's like Max Ross, but it's super expressionist instead of being like super realist.
It reminds me of Arkham Asylum, Haunted Earth. It was such a gimmick for that comic that it was fine, I think. But with this, I'm just, this could have been not in this style, and it would have been easier for me to follow. The problem I have with the art, Bob, is that I sometimes struggle to keep up with the story. And that's unusual for me. Especially with these 90s comics.
So, Matt, what goes down in the first issue of Dr. Midnight DOA?
So Dr. Peter Cross, a protege of Charles McNider, we figured that out, Bob, is blighted while investigating a venom-derived drug. I love how they tied it into modern continuity DC at the time.
Yeah, man, you gotta have venom. And one thing from this issue that really surprised me that I'd totally forgotten about is that Peter Cross is in Portsmouth City, which is not a real city as far as I can tell, but definitely sounds like several New England cities. So it's another kind of fictional DC city, but he actually is Norwegian originally, and he immigrated to the US, which I just think is funny. Whenever Dr. Midnight shows up in modern comics as the surgeon to the superheroes, I don't often think of him being Norwegian, but he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really translate that into the comic book, I guess, without putting some Norwegian. I don't know if they just have to throw some words in there since it is a text-based medium. But it's cool, though. I didn't realize that.
I also think it's interesting that one of the things that comes across from Matt Wagner's comics, especially from Sandman Mystery Theater, is the man is pretty socially liberal, or at least was for the 90s. I don't know where he's at these days, but has quite a social conscience. A lot of the murder mysteries in Sandman Mystery Theater revolve around social injustice and social exploitation. And you see that in this first issue, too, with Dr. Cross or Dr. Midnight being very much a doctor to the poor and the downtrodden, right? Which in some ways feels very 1930s. It's like a pulp character in the 1930s, but it's also an interesting way for Wagner to have this liberal, victim-focused character. And a page I found really interesting, I think I'd go with it for my favorite panel. It's on page 17 of the first issue. And we see Cross's home, and the architecture of it's really interesting, modernist, interesting structure. But then there's also a wry comment from the voiceover of his sidekick that it's a little bit of an ostentatious house for a social crusader. So I thought that was funny.
He lives in like this, it's crazy looking guy. It's like a Tony Stark type building.
Were you excited that the Terrible Trio shows up as the big bads for this miniseries? We already tied this into the Paul Dini detective run because Dr. Midnight makes a minor guest appearance in the Dini run. But we've got the Terrible Trio here too.
I do appreciate seeing the Terrible Trio because they've had more exposure in the DC universe and mythos than I was aware. We just keep finding them everywhere.
Obviously, there were never any other Dr. Midnight solo comics, but you can see like why thematically they fit with Dr. Midnight.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not that important to Batman. So if there were future Dr. Midnight stories, it would make sense that you could have them as ongoing villains, right?
Yeah, and it's smart, too. The people under the mask, I don't even really know who they are. I really don't care. But the characters themselves, and using this satanic ritual type stuff where they're making these sacrifices, it's a little different for them. Sometimes we see them as just like street guys with masks on. Sometimes we see them as these anamorphous creatures who can transform. Here, they're like a cult.
It does naturally fit in with animal mask, and then also, there's like strong occult symbolism of, I think we mentioned this in the Dini detective run, of earth, water, and sky with the three of them. And so there can be powerful occult symbolism there.
And those are the three things you can pollute.
Exactly. And then speaking of real advancements in the drawing, or in this case, the painting of owls, Matt, I did want to shout out page 44 in issue number one has a really well done splash page of an owl in front of an eclipsed moon.
It's a beautiful picture of an owl, Bob. That's how you draw owls. Not like in the 40s.
I don't know. I think there's room for cartoonish owls, too. I like cartoonish 1940s owls.
Well, Bob, my favorite panel is actually the last page. And there's also a very striking image of an owl on this page that looks like an owl that would be perched on someone's arm, not the way they were socialized. But anyway, back to this. This costume has such a 90s aesthetic to it. Like, they could not have gone more 90s with this, other than add maybe a pouch or two.
And it's a 90s aesthetic, but it's like late 90s aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, when you say 90s aesthetic, that usually connotes more excess than this has. It is very 90s, but it's also restrained, right? Like,
low budget.
I wouldn't say low budget. I would just say it has some aesthetic discipline.
It would look like the costume a superhero wears on a Saturday afternoon show.
Yeah. I guess your objection is just to the whole Dr. Midnight costume, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's pretty similar to the original Golden Age Dr. Midnight.
All right, Bob. So let's move into the next issue. Issue
number two, EKG.
So in EKG, Bob, Dr. Midnight and his crew investigate the terrible trio, but they're captured.
Yeah, and my favorite panel comes really early on in this issue, Matt. It's page 6. And this gets into a thing with alliteration that this comic really seems to like to do. And here we see Dr. Midnight inject a baddie who he blinded with its blackout bomb. And he says, as he's injecting him, that it's either Trank, Truth, or Trauma. And I just thought that was fun alliteration.
Okay, Bob. Issue 2 is where I did start to lose the direction of the comic. And you seem to tell me that there's this thing that's going on inside this burger thing is an interesting scene. See, I just feel like this would have been better and just without being painted.
A little later on page 12, you have a bad guy. And I think it feels disjointed to you because you're jumping around scenes a lot.
Yes.
And so I think between that and the painted art, that makes the thing feel a little ethereal to you. But no, I'm not talking about the scene itself. I'm just talking about the fact of you have Dr. Midnight chasing down one of the terrible trio's henchmen in an abandoned burger chain. And it's really hilarious to have an abandoned burger chain and a superhero doctor and have the superhero doctor be fighting in the abandoned.
Oh, the irony of it. Folks, I wish you could see the art. It's not that it's bad art. It's just hard for me to follow it in a comic book medium. It's more me a thing. Did you like that there's such a connection between all the different vehicles that we have in these comics? And I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but there's a really cool scene on, there's a lot of cars, a lot of chasing of cars and crashing of cars. That's even how Dr. Midnight had his accident. But then later on, we're going to see trains, planes, automobiles, rockets. What is it with that, Bob?
I wasn't thinking about that, but when you say that, that does give it a really heavy Golden Age feel. Well, if you go back to Golden Age superhero comics in the 40s, there is a real strong association with the superheroes and cars, with the superheroes and trains, right? Superman's stronger than a locomotive. Having all those modes of transportation really be fleshed out in this painterly style gives it a little bit this 1940s revival character.
It is a constant throughout. You'll see this. There's travel by land, sea, air, and then we have three villains. They're the land, sea, air villains. Thematically, it all fits. But let me just say this, Bob. My favorite panel is on page 29. And it's just Dr. Midnight doing the Batman thing. Not much more to it than that. Yeah.
I do notice, Matt, that in both of your favorite images of Dr. Midnight so far, he also has the owl.
We're just going to call him Owly.
He's not Hootie. He's definitely not Hootie again.
We've been perfect for the 90s. Hey, Hootie and the Blowfish.
I had that to say, Matt. Maybe the Blowfish would have seen
it. Yeah.
But yeah, in both of your favorite images, right, Midnight has the owl perched on his arm so far. I think that's cute.
One thing about Dr. Midnight is he gets hurt a lot.
Well, he's a doctor, Matt, to take care of himself then.
But it's like every night the man goes out and just gets shot all the time. He gets shot, he does his own x-rays, he sets his own wounds. It's crazy. This dude is so able to do all this. But at one point he does get shot in the leg, and I think that's how this issue ends, is he has been shot. And he is trapped in a room that is filled with gasoline or chemicals or something. And Carmella is there with him as well. And Carmella is meant to be sort of his nurse from the 40s.
Well, she's sort of the nurse. She's the narrator and the recorder. So she's doing that function that Dr. McNider did himself in the Golden Age. And then it also seems like, this is skipping ahead to the last issue, but it seems like they're more setting her up also to be a future Robin character had they done more of these.
A sidekick maybe, yeah, I could see that. Because she's more involved than the other crew that have had. And when I said crew earlier in the summary, he's got these other characters like Nightlight, He's got a big Midnight key, brass knuckles, and he'll hit him in the face and leave the imprint. And he's got these little lackeys.
Muscle, basically.
Yeah, it's his muscle. And he's got these little lackeys that are his eyes and ears throughout the city that he's always keeping in contact.
East was one from, I think, the first issue.
Right. So there's these other people that are involved with his, like, Midnight Crusade.
Haven't read much with the shadow in it, Matt.
Not much, no. But didn't Wagner do, like, a year one?
I think he did. Yeah, I haven't read it, but I think he did a year one comic of the Shadow. But in general, another thing, Matt Wagner's not just kind of influenced by, like, 1940s comics, which we talked about. He's influenced by the 1940s pulps. If you read, like, the Shadow, the Spider, Doc Savage, the Avenger, those guys usually have a network of, like, aides and assistants that help them out.
And agents of the Shadow. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So it's similar to that setup. Okay. I didn't think about that. You're right. They all had the ring.
Like in Sandman Mystery Theater, like Wesley Dodge doesn't have agents per se, but he does have like his partner, who's a mystery novelist, I believe, if I remember correctly, Diane Belmont, who kind of helps them out. So that's a common motif of the network of heroes for Wagner and for pulp heroes.
Well, Bob, in issue number 3, moving forward, Dr. Midnight and his crew defeat the terrible trio after going on both boats and rockets.
My favorite panel, again, is pretty early in this issue. It's on page 8, and it's going to really keep the alliteration theme going. So speaking of like satanic occult rituals, we see the terrible trio toasting themselves. And they're in front of the evil eye emblem of their corporation, which is called Preda, which is a very interesting and legally distinct from the recognizable fashion brand name, right? And then in front of the Preda evil eye logo, they're toasting their patience, persistence, and pragmatism. And as they're making this triply alliterative toast, Dr. Midnight bursts in and he says that they're all a plague on Portsmouth City. So just really loves the alliteration, our guy Matt Wagner.
And for those of you that are curious as to the Terrible Trio's plot, what they're trying to do, their goal is revealed in this issue in that they want to pollute the entire city so that the property they've purchased will need to be where they can, you know, everything can be rebuilt, their side of the city that they have.
Matt, I think we used to make fun of the plot of Superman 1 being about land.
It's been reused.
But I would say all supervillain plots should revolve around real estate.
That's pretty much the thing you have to own if you want power.
Who are the most evil people? Those who own real estate.
Hey, I own a little bitty house. I'm not that evil. Just a little bit.
You have a mortgage.
I mean, aspirational. I'm going to level the house and just sit on my land with a flag.
A flag that she made out of your shirt.
Yes.
To our Fantastic Four episode.
Exactly.
Matt, what was your favorite panel in issue number 3 of Dr. Midnight?
So, Bob, my favorite panel it's on page 17, and it's of the owl. There's a sequence of panels where this owl is dropping a bomb on the robotic vultures. And the only reason they have robotic vultures and not actual vultures or trained vultures is they were not going to draw that bird-on-bird violence.
Yeah, that would be too explicit. You got to have a substitute.
Yeah, they would get in some trouble for that, so that was not happening, but... yeah, that was dropping bombs. It's pretty awesome.
Nice. Well, Matt, I did want to end with a kind of overall question. Do you think that we should have a story where Dr. Midnight takes on the Court of Owls? Because I really want that.
I would totally read that. That's a good idea, Bob. You could be the one that revitalizes Dr. Midnight for the new generation of kids.
It would also just be a real estate plot.
Yeah. But Bob, would it be actual real estate?
Definitely. I don't believe in virtual real estate. Virtual real estate is a scam made up to satisfy you for not having any actual real estate.
One thing I did want to point out, Bob, in this issue before we go towards our ranking, is there's a much better shot of Dr. Midnight's costume on page 14. And here it looks a lot better. I don't know what he's done differently. It's a little more robotic and armor-like than what we saw in that other panel on the first issue. And I like this design.
This page that really had me thinking of Carmella as going to be his Robin because she's in like the bodysuit.
Right.
Dr. Midnight's costume on the page.
It's his final boss, but it's his final outfit to beat the bad boss.
Yeah, it's his version of the early 90s Daredevil armor. I thank you for indulging me and revisiting this. I know it wasn't your favorite, but where do you think this should go on our rankings? And I guess to catch listeners up, we've got a 13-item list currently. John Hickman's Fantastic Four is at number one. Gotham Year One is at number eight. Suicide Squad Get Joker is at number nine. And then holding out the bottom three spots are the three different runs on Gotham Knights in the early aughts.
All right, Bob. I'm going to put it between the current 11 and 12.
Wow.
I knew you're not going to like that, but this was not my favorite comic. It's not a bad comic. It's not... I think you got nostalgia goggles on this one.
Well, Matt, I would say I could see multiple different places that I could be satisfied with this being at. I mean, it's better than Hush. I mean, just...
This is going to be the most ridiculous lisp.
So, I mean, I could see a strong argument for number six above Hush. I actually don't prefer it to Broken City and Gotham Year One. I think I do prefer it to Suicide Squad Get Joker. But I could see an argument for putting it in at the new number nine in between Gotham Year One and Get Joker.
Okay. Devin Grayson's run on Gotham Knights was probably better than this, but I mean, that's my only real hang up on this. Because I was being respectful by not putting him above Azzarello, just to be respectful to you.
I'm okay with, I mean, I wouldn't put this above, I mean, if the list was just me, I mean, Broken City would be above Hush and this would be below Broken City.
Right. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and make the new number nine above Suicide Squad Get Joker?
That's kind of what I think.
If you're okay with that, I'm okay. If you're okay with that, I'm okay with that. The reason I did not put it anywhere near there was because I knew that you would be kind of iffy about Azzarello. And then Werewolf by Night, honest to God, that the memory of that comic is starting to fade.
I remember liking Suicide Squad Get Joker pretty well, but do you prefer the Alex Maleev art in Get Joker, or do you prefer the John Snyder painted art here?
Oh boy, Alex Maleev art. All right, hold on. All right, so Bob, as far as that art goes, I prefer art that's not been painted. So, you know, it's kind of leaning more towards putting it.
All right, Matt. Well, I compromised some and you compromised some. So you compromised and we'll move it up above Werewolf by Night, which is a fine one shot. It was just a little one shot. But since you prefer the Maleev art to the John Snyder art and Dr. Midnight, because the Maleev art isn't painted in Get Joker, and I think a little more clear. It's abstract too, but it's a little clearer and less expressive than the Snyder art. I think it makes sense to put it in at number 10 between Get Joker and Werewolf by Night. Happy with that?
That's a great spot.
Pretty much everything on the list is at least pretty interesting, except for the last thing.
Yeah, you can skip number 14.
You can just skip it. Favors. All right, listeners, this has been Uncanny Treks. That is Matt in the Southland. I am Bob in Cascadia. Next week, we'll be back with you with some more Hush coverage. We've got Hush 2 Part 3 and Hush Money to cover in Streets of Gotham. And we'll be back with the Volume 4 of Mark Waid and Mike Waringa's Fantastic Four, which I believe is called Hereafter. So join us next week.
Thanks for listening.